You're currently listening to the free version of Let Me Talk.
If you want longer, ad-free episodes, even earlier, head to lmtpod.com to find out how to subscribe.
Let me talk! Let me talk! Let me talk! Let me talk! Let me talk!
One, two, three, four!
Well, I found the words of Manuel Pellegrini ringing through my ears on the walk back from the Etihad to my car after the Boer draw with Arsenal. If you can't win, don't lose. But if we're being honest, I'm not entirely sure how much a point apiece really helped either side after Liverpool beat Brighton earlier in the day. Let's try and work it all out. This is Let Me Talk. I'm David Mooney. With me is the Athletic City correspondent, Sam Lee. Hello.
Hello.
Before we get into it, Sam, this is our 100th match analysis episode for Let Me Talk. Not exactly the best game to review for it, but we take what we can get.
Yeah, what a way to do it. 100 games in 13 months, and obviously some of those have been without football. Yeah, okay. And I suddenly feel how Rodri must feel.
Yeah, knackered all at all times, yeah.
And doing all the bloody work.
Obviously, yeah. I know how he feels, fucking hell.
Yeah. How long will you be up editing this tonight?
It shouldn't be too late, to be honest. We're starting at a fairly reasonable hour, so it shouldn't be too late. Let's talk about the game then, because I mean that's what people are here for. They're not here for the
banter as much as I can.
Yeah, they're not here for the banter bit at the start of shows. We're not that type of podcast, but. The sit rep then, Sam. Liverpool first, 67 points from 29. Arsenal second, 65 points from 29. City third, 64 points from 29. I really don't know where I stand on the point after that Arsenal game, because like the reward of winning it, I'm not sure was... I don't know how much of a reward it was compared to not losing it.
I'm not even sure there was much more they could have done in terms of go for it or change this or push a bit more. It just felt like nothing was going to happen.
Yeah, this is like, it. This is what's in the tank, yeah.
The feeling with City normally is, you know, if you think about, let's say, the Chelsea game at the Etihad where it was 1-1, and City hadn't played particularly well, obviously, in the first half. I still think they had some problems with the counter-attack start of the second half, but by the end... I mean, I can't remember when Rodri did score, but I remember messaging somebody with about 10 minutes to go saying, I feel like if City do score one, they'll get the other one. And obviously they didn't. But there's just that, there is that feeling. They did score the one. They pushed for another one. Obviously there was the Haaland miss in there earlier. But there is just that feeling that something's going to happen here. But it was one of those games, I think we've talked about it a couple of times recently, when you're involved in a match and you don't notice how bad it is. I mean, because we've talked about it recently, I was a bit more aware to it. And on Sunday, it was when I looked up at the clock and it was 27 minutes in. I was like, that's gone quickly. I was like, but also, this has been crap, hasn't it? And then I think I'd tweeted after about 65 minutes, like, ref, just blow the whistle on this. Because it did seem like that was just the way it was going to go. Every time Arsenal had a corner, I thought, well, maybe this is how they'll do it. Obviously, when they had the counter-attack with Trossard towards the end on the left, I thought, okay, well, this is the one. But there wasn't an awful lot going on, was there? And from City's point of view, like I say, I didn't feel like anything was coming. I don't think anybody did in the stadium or watching at home, to be fair. But I don't feel like there was anything else that could have been done. I don't think like they could have pushed more or threw more caution to the wind or anything like that. It just seemed like Arsenal had their number... in terms of how well Arsenal defended and nullified City. But also I just feel like City, whenever they did get a bit of space or an opportunity to do something, none of those responsible for doing it actually did.
Yeah. I couldn't help but shake the feeling as well that... do you remember how when the reverse fixture was played, we talked afterwards about how City had gone into that game and tried to make sure that it was 90 minutes where nothing happened. And in the end, nothing happened apart from the ball hitting Ake's face in the 86th minute or whatever it was. And they were unlucky with that. And I kind of found it kind of equally as frustrating that Arsenal came to the Etihad in this game and basically went, okay, nothing's going to happen in this game. And City couldn't find a way to generate that bit of luck. And I mean, I know Arsenal have effectively had a shot from outside the box and it's got a deflection and gone in their home game. But when it comes to City's home game, you look at the chances that were spurned. I mean, Haaland at the back post, like just make a connection with it, and you're like, you've got a really good chance of nicking the game there. That those moments just didn't seem to be falling City's way. And I think you're right. I don't really know what else you can kind of do about it. It's just one of those things where I think, actually, we've got to 29 games into the season, and I think City are where they're at, and that's just kind of where they are this season.
Yeah, I mean, the overall tone is dictated by the result, and not just, I don't know, like, if somehow, I don't know, City were 2-0 down and came back to draw 2-2, and it was a more positive draw, there was more buzz around the draw, whatever, I don't know, it might have been different, but obviously because everyone came out of the stadium feeling quite flat, and we're looking for the, have they clicked, will they click, what's City doing in big matches, is there anything missing, this kind of thing, you know, just as we're recording now, I've got a mate messaging me saying, you know, that's it now, like, can't see us winning the last 9 games, worried about Real Madrid. And I should just stress, these were his words, hence me using us. I cannot stress that enough. it's those kind of feelings. But, like, if we are looking at it through the prism of City in the big games and are they going to click, it's like, we can praise Arsenal's defending, obviously, like, they did do very well. I did see that tweet, by the way, when an Arsenal fan said, we're the best out-of-possession team in the world, and somebody quoted it saying, before the woke era, this would have been called parking the bus. And it is true, isn't it? That was what it was.
Yeah,
it was parking the bus. They did it very well. But that's what it was. So it's easy to focus on that and obviously focus on the fact that City didn't really have any spark. And you could name any of the attacking players. You can go, meh. You know, they didn't do a lot. But in terms of positives and stuff that, like, not just, oh, we got, what were the positives and scraping around for them? Like, genuinely important things that they will need. Whether it's in the Champions League or the Premier League, second balls, the defending. Like, it's easy to take it for granted because, like I say, we could focus on Arsenal's defence or City's flat attack. But to be in the opportunity to be able to attack, they had to win some second balls. They had to, you know, stand up to long balls because Arsenal were going direct. And Guardiola said that it was difficult to press because they were going direct. You know, they were winning those duels. And these are things where we look at the reasons why City haven't won many big games this season. You know, part of it is, well, they're not defending that well individually, especially compared to last season and the proper defending and all that kind of stuff. But they did today. So there is that element to take from it. And you think, you know, we were talking about the Real Madrid game the other day, about how that might go and it might be a bit more chaotic. And yeah, maybe it will be. But like, if they do defend a bit more like that, and obviously like Arsenal didn't attack especially often.
Yeah, I was gonna say this though.
But look, when they did, City did do very well. So I mean, you can take that as a good thing. I just think the overall title picture is there's just two other teams. I saw somebody tweet earlier on as well that you know, Arsenal won't catch Liverpool, but I don't know. I think they've come to City, and I think because of Arteta's own history and working with Pep and knowing that. You know, Pep is better. Like he just isn't. He's more experienced, got more resources in terms of what he can call upon and more ideas, that kind of thing. Arteta's obviously excellent, but he knows Pep's better. And even I don't know. Let's say even Arteta is better. Arteta's probably looking at him as like the mentor, so therefore thinks of himself as an understudy. And even though his team might be better than City, he's probably thinking in that negative frame of mind, like, well, we can't let City do what they normally do. So look, let's just go there and draw. And there's no reason why they can't go back to, you know, scoring 40 goals in 5 games or whatever it was they were doing before the international break when they play other teams as well. So it's just, I think the difficulty, as we've been saying for a while, is with two other teams in the title race, you can maybe rely on one of them to drop some points, but not both. And we still don't have the answer on City. Like, they didn't have to click today for it to all come together. And maybe, you know, maybe it clips next week. Maybe it has clicked. We didn't realise it for whatever reason. I'm not looking at it negatively at all. But obviously, I am looking at the game negatively because it was crap.
Yeah, but the weird thing is with it all is that's kind of why I'm wondering if actually the point is a fairly decent point because, again, coming back round to that Pellegrini thing, if you can't win, don't lose. Like, especially against a team that is trying to get away from you at the top of the table. It means that it keeps,
I know,
it.
But so it wasn't like, I think that's more more apt for Anfield when they should have lost and could have.
Yeah.
Whereas today there wasn't many opportunities to lose. And again, maybe that's because City defended very well. But there wasn't many opportunities to lose. So to get away with it, you still, I don't know. Like, yeah, obviously it's better not to lose, but it still feels more like, I don't know, like not an opportunity missed, because I was asked this by The Athletic. It was like, if you think there's an opportunity, because in hindsight you can say, well, Arsenal are going to come to the Etihad and they're going to defend, so City will have 25 shots and what. But like the fact that Arsenal came to the Etihad and defending actually made life much harder. So I'm not sure if it was an opportunity missed. But yeah, I don't know. The not losing thing probably feels a bit more apt for Anfield. But
yeah, no, I get that. But I'm just looking at it as now it's just one game to both Arsenal and Liverpool for City here. So like I don't think City are going to go through the rest of the season and win every remaining Premier League game. But if they do, then all it takes is one slip up from the other two, and that's it. And like there it is still tight enough for that to be a valuable point. And at the same time, it's like if you're not beating the teams around you, certainly don't lose to them. Don't let them get ahead from you. And I know you say there's not many opportunities for City to lose in that game, and that just brings me back round to kind of the thought I had about the defending and like winning the second balls. Maybe City were doing that because Arsenal were quite passive. Like maybe if Arsenal, I tweeted at full time. I actually thought from an Arsenal point of view, City might have been there for the taking today, and I was a little bit surprised that they didn't try and do any of the taking of it, because I think how valuable a win at the Etihad for Arsenal is there, and. Maybe it opens the game up and City go on and win it. But actually, I think that the problems that City have had all season, I actually thought Arsenal were quite well set up to exploit them, and they just didn't try.
Yeah. Well, this is one of those things where it's like you speak a lot more freely about other teams than you do about the team that you cover or follow or whatever. And, you know, if I say they didn't believe they could do it, that might be seen as quite inflammatory by an Arsenal fan maybe. Or, you know, I can imagine, like, and I'm not saying he's... a bad man by any means, but yeah, I can imagine like Ian Wright or, you know, Arsenal aligned pundits not putting it in that with that same kind of brutal way. And obviously they take, you know, they've taken a huge leap forward compared to last season. I suppose even if you just did a kind of 90 minute comparison between this game and the one last season, you could maybe draw that conclusion. But like I said earlier, just in terms of Arteta and his own kind of background with City and Pepe, obviously, again, this sounds quite inflammatory, but you know what I mean? Like, just feels inferior. Like, knows that City are amazing, knows that Guardiola is amazing, and therefore didn't want to give them any spaces to exploit, and just went, you know what? Probably it's more up for them. If you can't win, don't lose. And then, thanks very much, we'll go back to the rest of our fixtures and we'll try and score 4 and 5 against them. And look, that's it. Like, they might get a bit of criticism for that today. I'm not doing that because, you know, things change after every result. People like kind of realign their thoughts and expectations and stuff. Let's say Arsenal win the next three games, everyone will be saying that was a good point, City, because they went there, they didn't get beat, and now they've got back to doing what they're doing. But you're right, going into it, that was a very bad matchup for City. If you think about how Chelsea have caused City problems by doing what they do, Arsenal could do that, more or less.
And I just think with the players that City had missing as well.
Yeah, exactly. But again, you know, and it sounds harsher than like an Arsenal reporter would say it, but I just think they probably thought, we'll go there and we'll play it safe because they're City. And that's probably the next step they've got to take. They've probably taken a big step already, but the next step is probably to think, well, we're Arsenal. We can do this there, which, to their credit, you have to say Liverpool have had for years. No, and they've not always done well at the Etihad. Like, they haven't won at the Etihad for a long time, but they certainly try. They're themselves. You know, they don't come in going, we're scoring 5-6 against teams, and then go, you know what, we're going to put everyone behind the ball. They give it a go. And that's one difference. But again, it doesn't mean that might not be a difference that loses Arsenal the title. They might win it because of that.
Coming up after a short ad break, we'll talk more about the game against Arsenal. We'll be discussing Guardiola's subs. We'll talk about Kevin De Bruyne. And we'll look at the impact that Jeremy Doku made on the game.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Let Me Talk is sponsored by you, the listeners.
The best way to support the podcast is by subscribing via Memberful.
You can pay as little as £2 per month, which gives you early access to all our podcasts ad-free, and they're packed with even more content.
That gives you even more minutes of us to fill up your week.
Subscribing is really easy, and the longer episodes will integrate seamlessly with your podcast app of choice, be it Spotify or Apple. Head over to lmtpod.com for more information on signing up and links to all of our socials.
I'm wondering, just like I'm throwing stuff at the wall here and seeing what sticks, but I'm just wondering how much conservatism will play in winning this title. Because you look at City and you look at Arsenal, especially after the game on Sunday, and you look at Liverpool and their approaches, and it's almost like Guardiola is we know this about him. It doesn't really play into the narrative of Sunday's game, but like generally Guardiola is quite paranoid about the problems that his team could fall into, and kind of he's very very safe and protecting kind of what he's got and how he can build up to make sure that the other team do not get an opportunity to do what they do best. Arsenal were very conservative at the Etihad, and it feels like this season Liverpool are just they kind of play with abandon. They it's almost like they're not really that worried about the problems that the other team can pose, because they're like we just cause our problems and then get on with it and do what we can do with there. And if it ends up in a mad game where we have to scramble it around, we scramble it around. We can deal with that. We know City are not set up to kind of do that. I don't really feel like Arsenal are set up to do that. And so I think it's an interesting dynamic between the three of them about just kind of the safety first approach is maybe gets City and Arsenal, maybe keeps them closer to Liverpool, on the basis that Liverpool maybe drops too many points by being a bit too gung-ho at times. I don't know.
Yeah, but why would City have drawn so often? Like, what's the...
Because they're not as good as they were in previous years.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, we've answered our own question all the time. You know, they lose the ball a bit more, they don't win it back so much. Yeah, but it's funny, isn't it? Because you'll look at whoever wins the league and you go, oh, that was the best approach. But somebody might win the league by 1 point or by goal difference.
Yeah.
And there is no right answer. Like I say, Arsenal have obviously still got a step to go where they can go to the Etihad, which is probably, to be fair, the final step, and say, look, we're going to play our own game. But, you know, they might win the league anyway, despite that. Or maybe even, you know, not despite it, but because of it. Maybe that point at the Etihad was really useful for them. Yeah, I watched the end of the Liverpool game today, and like they just didn't keep the ball. And it's funny because I remember earlier in the season, like Carragher being like, no chance we're going to win the league because we can't control games. I said, well, they've got this far. And, you know, it's still pretty much the same. But again, you're right, it just kind of works for them. And, you know, maybe a big reckoning is coming around the corner and it'll catch them out, but maybe it isn't. And, you know, maybe, again, this is, we've become used to teams winning the title by being perfect, because City have been, and Liverpool were in the one season when they won it, you know, basically up until the point they had won it. And that's what it takes, but, you know, maybe now they're not. I still think overall the best team have been Arsenal so far this season.
Mm.
You know, and to be able to, because they are very defensively solid anyway, obviously they've not shown it as exaggeratedly as they did against City, probably because they've not had to. But they can score plenty of goals as well. They are a threat. I think, you know, in terms of that control of matches, they've got that better than City and Liverpool have. But the other two, look, City, as we've been saying for a long time, and as I said on the preview show the other day, they're still, in my opinion, like performing at an A level. But obviously A star is their usual ceiling. And, you know, whether they get there or not, I don't know. Whether winning the league, just this A level is enough or not, I don't know. But yeah, we'll just keep looking for answers, and then they're not really coming, are they? But we can talk about loads of individuals, because there were loads of individuals who were quite rubbish.
Yeah, there was, just before we do, there was, I just want to read this from John McKenzie, because this is kind of what sparked the thought in my head. Basically, he said, this title race is so interesting precisely because the reason why City versus Arsenal plays out so cautiously is the same reason why Liverpool are top of the table right now through not playing cautiously. The things that Pep and Arteta are scared of are the same things that Klopp isn't. And then a bit later down in the thread, he basically says, during Liverpool-Brighton, why aren't they managing the game here? During Arsenal-City, why is this game so risk-averse? Yeah, and it's just like, they're just so opposite ends of the scale right now.
Yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, So, like I say, in terms of the defensive stuff, like, I thought Akanji was really good. Guardiol as well, especially because, you know, he was on the ball a lot, and he gave the ball away in like kind of risky situations a couple of times in either half, but he was really good, solid defensively, and I think, you know, you need to be, especially with the injuries, like Ake going off early on, you just think, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I thought Lewis, by the way, was fantastic.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I don't think Arsenal really got him that much. I thought he was very good. Like, again, in terms of personality on the ball, because as much as Arsenal were quite passive in terms of they were deep, you know, they were ready to win that ball back high up. And he took on a, at times, not all the time, but he did take on a lot of responsibility on the ball, and he did do very well coming on. But yeah, without those injured defenders, whether they were injured before the game or Ake going off, the ones who were on the pitch did really well. I thought Rodri was, I mean, fantastic. It sounds like, you know,
superb, isn't he?
You get like a cheat sheet, and you can, it's like things to say after a City game if you don't really know what's going on or not being paying attention or didn't watch it, but you had to pretend you have. You go, oh, Rodri was great. Like, he just is all the time. But like, in terms, you know, I mentioned the second balls and that kind of thing and the intensity he was playing at. I thought at half-time in particular, if anything was going to happen, it would be him that made it happen. But then obviously with about half an hour to go, I was like, oh, okay, well, no one's going to make anything happen. Because, you know, when they were blocking shots from the edge of the box, and that's probably his most common route of scoring a goal, you just think, well, it's probably not happening today. But he was the best player by a mile, I thought. And then everyone in front of him just floors all over the place. Although I thought I was just confused by the subs. I'm not saying they were bad. I'm not saying they were good. I was just confused.
Yeah,
by
well,
them.
Let me ask you about them, because I called it at the time Guardiola's big roll of the dice, because Docker and Grealish for Kovacic and Foden on 61 minutes. I mean, first off, I thought Foden was playing pretty well, and I thought it could have been De Bruyne that came off. I was really surprised that it was Kovacic, because I thought he was playing really well, and I thought part of the reason why Guardiola was playing really well on the left was because Kovacic kept dropping in and helping him there, being the extra man for him to kind of get out of the tricky situation, the Arsenal press there. Because Arsenal were really targeting City's left to try and get in behind. And City were kind of like, okay, well, come and do it, because us two, like Kovacic and Guardiola, we'll just play out of it.
Yeah, well, this is it. Like, I saw people saying, well, you know, when I tweeted about them both coming on, because even, you know, just Grealish and Docker coming on, you start thinking, okay, well, who's this going to be? And I saw people saying, oh, you know, one will be Kovacic. And Jack at the Mail, he was like, well, presumably one's Kovacic. And genuinely, like, obviously I was completely wrong, but I was thinking, I was just completely wrong. Like, I was on a completely different wavelength. Like, why would it be Kovacic? Like, he seems like an integral part of that middle of the pitch. He seems an integral part of how City are getting the ball up the pitch. Why would Guardiola want to tinker with that? But again, like, obviously I was wrong. And also I thought the one who would be going off was De Bruyne. Because to bring us to that, like, Chelsea game, you know, he missed a lot of the crosses. United game, he was quiet, and we only kind of noticed because, oh yeah, Foden was the match winner here. Normally it's De Bruyne. And then obviously Anfield, he got taken off. He wasn't up to much. And it was the same again here. You'd imagine that is kind of a post-injury scenario, kind of inevitability in terms of De Bruyne's form. But yeah, you'd want him back. Like, but also, like, physically, I don't know, again, if this is just like coming back, or maybe this is just my negative perception and it's miles off. But like, when he's in the middle against like Rice and people like, you think, physically, is he going to win that battle? Is he going to run past Declan Rice?
Well, I don't know. There was a couple of times where in the second half they were attacking the north stand end. That's towards the end of which I sit, so I'm seeing the breakaways a little bit more than in the first half. And there was a couple of times where he was the one that they like not got played through, but had the opportunity to go through, and it was almost like he'd touch it and kind of get himself into the space. And like last season, maybe the season before, you kind of see it, like in your mind's eye, you see De Bruyne kind of bursting out of that defence and pulling a shot out of somewhere. And this season, in my mind's eye, what I see is him bursting forward, getting caught up and having to turn back to keep possession. Yeah. And I don't know if he's lost a yard of pace, or if the Arsenal defence is stronger and quicker and like is just up to much more this season than it was last season. If it's a bit of both, if it's a bit of post-injury kind of getting back to it sort of thing. But it just didn't feel like things were... like I didn't get that as... I mean, this is a very Guardiola thing to say, but I wasn't getting the smell that he was there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And that was it. When the subs came, I thought, well, it must be De Bruyne. And again, you start thinking, put Foden in the middle. But again, if we're going to do like an individual rundown of all the players ahead of Rodri, like Foden hadn't really made the case to stay on either. But, you know, like... I think I can't remember exactly what Guardiola's justification was for bringing Foden inside, or if he even did. But just, you know, we know the way he plays inside in the spaces, in the pockets, that kind of thing. And, you know, it feels like the kind of thing Guardiola said about, you know, a lot of teams that defend deep. You know, you need it to be that kind of pockets game. So it was a bit of surprise that he went with De Bruyne, who wasn't playing well, over Foden, who he wasn't playing well either, but is maybe suited to getting on the ball in the middle and turning and making something happen. As difficult as it was. And then when Grealish, so the whole thing about Grealish and his importance to the team, as everyone's going to know by now in terms of their own opinions and certainly ours, you know, Grealish is important because he gives you that control of the game. But so he didn't need control when they brought him on. They needed somebody to create a bit of magic. And, you know, if he'd have played like he did certainly early in Copenhagen, which is a very small snapshot. But, you know, if it was the best Grealish, then that would have been great. But, you know, not losing control is good, and you didn't get that with Grealish, but you needed something else. And then Mr. Doku, who, you know, because shows you that you can generate stuff, you can generate excitement, you can beat a man, but for the love of God, do something when you've beaten him. It was a joke in the end. Like this is an accumulation of performances in my mind that he's had basically since that Bournemouth game, which was about 2 years ago. I just, like, this is an overreaction, but I feel like he's been terrible this year.
Yeah, it just kind of...
Just do something, mate. Like, and I don't just mean beat the man and then do nothing. Like, because the amount of times, and I think, again, like I said, it's an overreaction, but I think why it's so disappointing is because in a game where people had such little joy in one against one scenarios, or even, you know, so you could see City early on, they were trying to get De Bruyne to the byline for him to cross, usually to Haaland, but when he got there once, he'd try and pull it back towards the penalty spot. Even those were kind of cut out. So you think, oh God, he's done it again, he's managed to get past, and like he's actually got space to run into, and then he just completely waste it. You just think, well, what was the benefit of that then? Like, that could have been anyone over there. That was especially frustrating, but again, it's more frustrating. Because I don't think he's done anything. I can't remember the last really good thing he did with a proper end product in a long time for City. Again, you know, it was first season, so I'm not saying he's rubbish by any means, but I think he's been bad recently. And then, yeah, Mr. Haaland.
Yeah. Well, before we get to Big Earl, in terms of Doku and his kind of creative spark, because there is two schools of thought here. Like you've just said there, that once you've beaten the man, like, do something with it. But at the same time, like, he's getting into that position, he's drilling it into the box, and there's, you know, it's being cut out, it's not finding Haaland, it's not finding whoever's De Bruyne or whoever's coming in. At the same time, he's got into that position. And, you know, for what, 60 minutes beforehand, Bernardo wasn't getting there. You know, De Bruyne wasn't getting there. There was nobody getting into that position around the back and actually creating those opportunities to get it across. So, like, as much as it's frustrating, there is something there. There is something that there's a territory there that you are now forcing Arsenal further back because of the threat that he gets in behind and does something.
It's hard to imagine them being any further back than they were, I would say. It feels a bit like the Haaland thing as well, like, you know, just the presence of him being there. But I don't know. Like, I feel like, I don't know, maybe teams are getting a bit wiser to Haaland, but generally maybe it's his own finishing that's the issue. But I feel like with Doku, I don't know, like, again, maybe this is just me and not how, like, a Premier League analyst would look at it, but I feel like there's so much credit in the bank with Haaland and there's such obvious danger. But with Doku, there obviously is danger, but it's almost like, well, I don't know, somebody suggested that this was what Dyche did when Everton were there. It was like, well, you can have the wing, mate, but then we're just going to block out the middle. And then that's a fine tactic you can use against any winger. But when it's Doku in particular, you kind of wonder if teams just go, oh, yeah, okay. Well, you can do that. But, yeah, I don't know if that threat is there. You know, I don't know if it's quite the same sense of, oh, this is the guy that's come on. We need to be careful. We need to drop back. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm doing him a disservice. I don't know. I feel like there's obvious threats in his game. There's obvious strengths, 1v1, but you'd have to look at it afterwards. And if you were genuinely looking at the tapes, you'd see that he's not picking up. He's not creating enough when he gets there. Mm. It's just not happening.
Yeah. De Bruyne maybe stayed on with that kind of, he might do something threat.
They didn't risk it at Anfield. With Anfield in mind. Yeah, exactly. With Anfield in mind, you think, normally, if Anfield hadn't happened, you go, yeah, well, presumably that's why he's staying on. But because it did, and, you know, Foden going inside and combining with Kovacic and all that. But again, like, this is the thing. We're just trying to piece together what we think might happen or might have happened based on some examples that have happened recently. Whereas Guardiola's got, like, the full picture in his head. And look, he's not right all the time. But there'll be a million reasons why De Bruyne stayed on this time rather than Foden. But certainly as far as my understanding of it goes, I was confused by the subs. Specifically the thing I didn't necessarily like and would have changed for whatever the hell it's worth, is I would have put Foden in the middle instead of De Bruyne. But like, so what? Like, I can tell you a million things I'd have done instead, but it doesn't matter, does it? Would City have won anything if I were the manager? No.
You never know. It's easy, isn't it, with the money?
That is true, actually. I did forget they won it in February. Thank Christ for that.
That's it for the free version of Let Me Talk. There is more for members, though. Go to lmtpod.com if you want to sign up for those longer ad-free episodes. Sam, what have we talked about for members in this one?
Yeah, loads. So we've got a bit more of a rolling Netflix documentary update. We've got City's form against the top teams, but also the other teams aren't the top teams. The record's pretty good. The three teams in the title race, Haaland's form, fitting him in, how all that's going, whether he's a League Two player, etc., etc.
Yeah, that's all for members. There is a little bit of housekeeping we need to do now as well, Sam, isn't there? Because, yeah. Unfortunately, these free shows, they are going to come to an end very soon, aren't they?
Yeah. So basically, when we started in February, we were like, okay, the best way to do this, because it's very difficult to get sponsors for podcasts, and we can't do it for free because of the work involved. So we made it paywall. A lot of people signed up. Then we signed a deal with Audio Always for a year. They would help us produce the details show. We get the nice, sexy videos, and we're in the studio. We get their support. And also, part of that pitch was making the free shows that you've been listening to and hopefully enjoying. However, we didn't make up the gap between what we were bringing in with subscribers and the amount of listeners that we had with The Athletic. It's just not financially viable for Audio Always to continue doing the free shows and the detail shows as they are. And also, as part of them looking into ways to keep it going, they went out to look for sponsors and it was difficult to get any. So we now know that, well, even with their help, we can't really get sponsors for this to keep it going ourselves. Audio Always can't be involved anymore. We are going to continue details in some guys. We need to really nail that down and give you an update on that soon. You know, we'll still have Nadim featuring. We'll still have Izzy featuring. We're still going to keep reacting to every game. So in terms of the comparison to what you got with The Athletic, we're still doing reactions to every game. This Arsenal game was obviously the 100th match show we've done. So there's, you know, we've kept up that end of the bargain. We will still do extra detailed shows. We will still be here for transfers. We will still be here over the summer. Emergency podcasts, all that kind of stuff. But look, when we started it in February last year, we were like, okay, we're going to have to make people pay for it. We made it as cheap as we possibly can. And I appreciate you either can't pay for it or don't want to pay for it. And if that remains the case, then fine. But for the short term, at least, the only way to carry on listening to this podcast probably after April is going to be signing up for the Memberful, which you can find the details for at lmtpod.com.
It's £2 a month. It's £20 for the year.
Yeah. Honestly, we made it as cheap as we possibly can. Like, our overheads have gone up slightly recently, but I can't see it ever getting to the stage of us going, oh no, we need to pass this on to the customer. It's not going to happen. Like, it can't be any cheaper than £2, but I can't see it. You know, I don't think we're not going to put it up every April in line with inflation. It's going to be £2. We've made it as cheap as we can make it because that works for us. We hope it works for certainly for the people who have been subscribing and for you guys who have been listening for free, you know, for the old Athletic free listening vibe. Hopefully you can stay with us, not just because, you know, it's money for us, but I hope if you enjoy this podcast, you're still going to be able to keep enjoying it. That's how it is. We decided to give it a go with audio always. And me and Mooney sat in the Costa in Salford Keys thinking, oh, we get this amount of listeners and we'll grow it and we'll do this. We just haven't got near it. So we gave it a go. We know the sponsors aren't there. We know there is interest in the podcast, obviously. But, you know, it's quite a high bar to make money off it from audio always. Probably why the Athletic got rid of us in the first place. But in terms of the memberful thing, in terms of the amount of shows we've done, we've still been smashing them out. We've done it for as cheap as possible. The members are very happy. We've got great retention rate on that. Always good feedback. Always good feedback. Hopefully you guys, this is the sales pitch. If you want to keep listening right until the end of the season and all the stuff in the summer and beyond, it's going to be the memberful option. Please
head over to lmtpod.com if you want to have a look how to sign up.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.